one-on-one with Greg Gutfeld, and I really want you to listen to this interview because I think you're going to find it super insightful. First, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
One-third of all murder cases in America remain open.
He had told me that if I opened my eyes, he would slit my throat.
Each one is called a cold case.
The DNA evidence taken from the victim was a match. The linen rapist was at it again.
Based on the hit A&E television program.
A phone call is placed, one that changes a family's life forever.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
If you could see the fire in his eyes, he screamed at me, "You want it? Get your tape recorder out."
Get new episodes of Cold Case Files every Tuesday on Podcast One, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you listen to podcasts.
From New York City, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Today, Adam sits down one-on-one with Greg Gutfeld. And now, growing up, his family suffered from money pox. Adam Carolla.
All right, Greg Gutfeld with me. We're at home at the Fox station. Gutfeld, name of the show. Of course, weeknights, Fox, 11 p.m. I see it at 8 p.m., I think, where I am on the West Coast. And podcast, the one with Greg Gutfeld as well. So congratulations. I use you and your success as a sort of tale and metaphor of what this country's been needing for a long time. I've said for the longest time when people were telling me to shut up and not give my opinions on X, Y, and Z and sponsors aren't going to like it and blah, blah, blah. I was like, there's a million Mexican food restaurants. Someone's got to open an Italian food joint and right. then they would get a lot of business.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, no, just open another Mexican food joint. But you guys opened an Italian food joint and zoomed right to number one.
Yeah, it was it's kind of like a tinier version of what Fox did. Because like before Fox News, there was just all Italian restaurants, all Mexican restaurants.
Right.
And then AL said, well, let's open up a Mexican – I forgot the metaphor. The Mexican restaurant. No, the Italian restaurant. And it zoomed to number one. So this was just almost like a repeat of that, but on a smaller scale with a late night comedy show. You know,
and I guess the question is, like, what took so long? Like, we've known, like, just within late night, the networks started sort of leaning left and then turning left and then going hard left. And it's been that way for a number of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question would have been, where's the alternative in late night? And even though it's been a little over a year,
yeah.
right? But why hasn't it been a little over 3 years?
It's a good question because – when we started Red Eye, I mean, remember, I was a magazine editor. I'm not a comedian. So I got the job hosting Red Eye coming out of like print. So I wasn't adept. I wasn't competent. And the first thing somebody did was they wrote, is this the next Daily Show? Which it was just absolutely absurd because you couldn't compare the two. You know, that was Daily Show, highly, highly produced, great host. Me, incompetent, kind of sweaty, panicked dude trying to steer this like jack wagon, whatever. So I think it took time. For me personally, I had to keep doing this thing over and over and over again until I got somewhat better at it. And the five helped and that. And so then it became ripe. And then we talked about it probably 8 or 9 years ago. And we started doing it as a weekly 6 or 7 years ago. On Saturday nights, and I think it was just more of a time commitment for me. But I also think that there was a belief that – or a fear that maybe the critics were right. It's like maybe we're not supposed to do this. You know, it's kind of like, you know, conservatives aren't supposed to be in culture. They're supposed to be on Wall Street. They're in med school.
Right.
You know, they're not in art school. And the thing is I've always rebelled against that because I've always been on the pop culture, cultural side, but – conservative, libertarian, I know I could do it, but it's hard to find other people to do that. It's not. It's a really tough thing. And I think it's like, I'd rather not be known for that and do it anyway, you know? And I think that's what happened. It kind of surprised people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's also becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because, like, I've done some work and I'm doing some work with the Daily Wire. And then you go, all right, well, we got to get some writers. And it's like, these people don't want to work for the Daily Wire. Not because they're against the Daily Wire, but they don't want to be blackballed in Hollywood.
My problem.
And so there's some guy, and he's a big fan of the show, but he can't come on because he watches it like, you know, like a Murano, like a Jew pretending to be a non-Jew and, you know, this Spain in 1941 because they didn't want to be rounded up. And it's like, could you blame them?
I can't tell you how many examples I have of this, of I love your show, can't do it. That's
right.
It. Or something comes up. And also there's the interference that's run by the team, like the publicists who are, you know, it's like somebody could be totally into it. And you know he's – and then this person will go, no, you can't do it. You can't do it. And it's always the publicist. And they're just – we're just looking out for you. We, you know, you do this. It's, I'm thinking, so who's going to – who's running the mob on this one? Is it like other hosts? Or is it some kind of phantom? You know,
the publicists are the worst people on the planet just in general.
Right.
There's like certain jobs that attract horrible people.
Yes.
Like, you know, like sort of when you go, I could never be a meter maid. Ruining people's days all day long, you know, but it's like, oh, there's certain people that don't mind and or are attracted to that. So it attracts a horrible person. They're probably amongst the most progressive people because they have to navigate Hollywood in a way that's even more intricate than a host or an actor because they have so many clients with so many crazy beliefs that would fire them in a heartbeat if they found out X, Y, or Z. And then they're also – they have that thing that network lawyers have, which is you go, oh, you got to check it with them, make sure. And they just go, no. Like the answer is no because they'll never get fired. If the answer is no, they will get fired. If the answer is yes and something goes wrong.
Yeah. So all risk is incentivized, disincentivized.
Right.
Don't do it.
Right.
I remember this when I was editor of Men's Health and trying to get celebrities on the cover. That didn't really happen until after I left because they had to change all the editorial. But they were like, no, this was too gay. They thought the magazine was too gay.
Oh, right.
And then, you know, I get to Stuff Magazine. I'm editor of that. No, it's too raunchy.
Right.
It's nothing but hot chicks. So you go from ab dudes to hot chicks. And then I go to Maxim in London. And it was – but they always have this thing where what the people enjoy, the publicists don't. They're always trying to do what are the advertisers going to like, you know, and advertisers want their ad next to something really innocuous. And that looks like an ad that looks like just like their ad. And so it's like you're dealing with people that actually don't like your customer, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of go, well, look, you're a publicist. Your client has a book or an album or a TV show and you draw this kind of audience. So why not just put them in front of the biggest audience they can draw or can find? But they don't. So there's probably a bunch of closeted conservatives or true libertarians or just sort of open-minded folks who go, that guy's got an opinion. That guy's got an opinion. I'm happy to go on either show and share my opinion, who you just may not be getting. And so what you're up against is while the other shows got George Clooney, you got Scott Baio and Kevin Sorbo.
Right.
And then you go, okay, but then how much of it is the guest versus the host versus the format? And then you go, oh, we can't get the guys who wrote on Conan to come into the writer's room because they're scared of being blackballed. It drives me insane that they never stop complaining about McCarthyism. And they're more than happy to blackball anybody who crosses the line.
No, they're the new McCarthyites, especially in this woke culture. But it's funny. It's like, so I'm counting on this show succeeding without names.
Right.
And creating at least, and I know this sounds like a cop out, but kind of like creating our own celebrities, which actually is what happens at Fox. Everybody suddenly has a fan base of 3 million people if they're watching this shit constantly, you know, and then every now and then I'll put somebody on that is big and it never really does anything. And the interviews are usually so safe and awkward because hey, I don't want to piss anybody off. And I just say, how's your book or how's your movie? And or else you end up in one of those things where the person is in a what are those press things where they're like just
junkets
and they're just sitting there. And I actually, you know, I think we have done maybe two or three of those and they're just like, why am I doing this? This is not fun for me. It's not fun for them. The viewers have probably turned the channel. So I vow never to not to chase this stuff anymore because none of these big stars are going to have a strong opinion. They might be funny. Like it'd be great to get like a Paul Rudd. You know, he's like he's a good guest, right?
Mm-hmm.
But crackpots and weirdos that Howard Stern does and Letterman got weird people. That's kind of more interesting to me. Or just unusual people, you know, might be better.
What is the process? Because I see you sit down to host the show. You have a clipboard and a pile of papers. I can see that you've written longhand on many of those papers. It looks like a Sharpie.
Yes, it is.
And I think, yeah, it feels very Nutty Professor-esque. I was talking to Dr. Drew about it, and he was saying, I don't think he has writers. I think he just has a pile of papers he goes up there with. But the monologues are nicely formed and they're cogent and they've got a theme and they're strong monologues. Mm-hmm. And so are you putting those together during the day?
Yeah.
Do you have some help?
Yeah. I mean, so what happens is I get up at 8:30, coffee, and I start – the hardest part is picking the story. And there's nothing worse than being like a third of the way through something and going, no, this is not good. Mm-hmm. But tonight we're going to do something on Prince Harry at the UN. And that came last night. And that makes me happy because then I don't wake up in the middle of the night and go, shit, I don't have something. So I write that out. I send it to – I have – you know Nick DiPaolo?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he works on my monologue. So he'll write – I'll send like a 5-minute monologue and then he'll punch it up with – stuff that is either great or so offensive that's unusable.
Yeah, but he's really funny.
Yeah, and he could get – I mean he – I like people that will cross the line so I can get as close to the line as possible. Mm-hmm. So he'll do something that is like, that'll get me fired. But if I just replace that one word, then mm-hmm. I have – then it's a joke. It's still – it's not – maybe it's not as shockingly funny. But then I have Joe Mackey – who's a great comedian, and Joe DeVito, they're on staff. So like one of them will get a stab at the monologue and then also put lines into other segments. But mm-hmm. most of the time I'll write and edit all the segments and then they put in the jokes and then I'll edit it down trying to get it as tight as possible. And then all this shit – the reason why I have all these notes is because I find that writing longhand while thinking – it uses more parts of your brain. And I do this when I work out. I used to do it on a stair climber. And then now I just do it sometimes I'll do it on a bike, you know, Peloton. But if I'm writing it down, there's a weird thing where like if you don't have a thought but you start a sentence, the thought will complete the sentence. You just need to kind of like stick a pen in the brain and kick it along and I'll just go like the problem with Prince Harry and I don't even have an answer. It's like and then it happens.
Right.
You know? So I try not to look at it too much, but I end up looking at it. I do look like a crazy person. That is for sure when I do that, especially on the five. So because the five will have you can see more of me on the five and you can mm-hmm. see my notes and scribblings and I am a little weird.
Well, you know, I wonder if your literary background was a better base for hosting. I'm thinking of, I don't know, Piers Morgan.
Yeah.
You know, he's a very good host, interviewer. He had that sort of literary background. I wonder if it ends up being like martial arts where you had this great college wrestling career or something and you use it as a base.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think so. You know, I always tell people when they call me a comedian that I'm not. I've never done stand-up, and so I can't take that stolen valor. I always say that. But what I did was I ran meetings, editorial meetings, frequently, maybe three times a week, sit down either with art staff or ideas for whatever. It's an easy job doing a magazine because you put out one product. I didn't realize that until I got to TV.
Right.
It's amazing that you have one deadline, and I was like worried about that.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, but I would just sit and then we'd – so you'd find stories and what's – and the stories are like jokes and they're like ideas for jokes. And then you're sitting around talking to people and I have to almost be a host to them and ask them what they think about things. And I think that's what kind of – that's what I do. Basically, I'm doing a story pitch meeting as a show in a weird way. Like, what do you think? What do you think? You know, is this, you know, and we will even comment on whether we should even be doing the story because it's so stupid or it doesn't make any sense, you know, which is, you know, nobody does on any other show here anyway. It's like you don't suddenly question your own value.
Well, you know, all right. So first off, as far as stand up goes, when you have a really nice platform, like you have a platform, like Bill Maher has a platform, you know, and there's no doubt that real time is a nice platform to sell tickets for live events. And in today's world, stand-up takes a lot of different shapes, you know. It's more of an evening with Gutfeld,
you know what
I'm saying? And the phone must be ringing a little bit with guys. I mean, I know how the business works. They'll call and go, hey, you want to play the whatever theater in Seattle? You know, we can set you up for that. And you're also a guy who sort of likes a challenge and likes to evolve and go, just because I didn't do this doesn't mean I can't do that.
I'm doing live shows now.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, but I'm doing it live. I still don't feel like it's stand-up. It's exactly – I've probably done like maybe 100 of them now, but there is exactly what you said, evening with. So what I do, and I have crutches on this because just walking out, I've never done the walk out, stand up and just start talking about the world. Instead, the first crutch is they bought tickets to see me. So it's like 90% done, right? They love Fox.
Right.
They love.
Right.
So it's like I don't have to worry about a heckler or somebody, some drunk asshole that's going to make my life hell. These are people that have been looking forward to this. So that already takes a lot of pressure off. Then I have a screen in which I go through slides of things that are weird or bizarre or unusual about Fox.
Right.
And then so it's like I throw Tucker up there. Huge applause. I'll do an impression of Tucker. I'll do an impression of Dana Perino. I do and these are all would not work if I were in an actual comedy. Yes, a club. They'd be like, what? This did I enter some kind of weird cult meeting? Because everybody where I'm at knows what I'm talking about. But then we do that for like 20 minutes and then we go into issues. So we could throw up there like the Border Patrol guy with the whip.
Right.
The rain. And we could riff on that for whatever. And I'm with Tom Shalhoub. Tom is a comedian and he's hosting me. He's also contributor to Fox. So he will like ask me questions and we'll just talk about all sorts of stuff. It's like 2 hours and then we have Q&A. So I would say there's as many laughs as you would at a comedy show, but it doesn't have the performance level of a comedian going out there and going, I've got an hour of just bulletproof material that –
no,
you can walk in from outer space and get it.
I'm going to change your life. So I just had this conversation with Bassem Youssef, I think. I'm looking at my producer. But I did it for a Take a Knee pod, I believe, like a subscription pod. So I'll share it on this is my ACS pod. But so there's a couple things because I've been through your arc and the first thing, and he said the same thing. Now, Bassem is from Egypt and he was sort of the John Stewart of Egypt. And then he got run out. He had this huge following in Egypt and then he got run out of town and he came here and he thought, I'm a host. But he kept saying his mantra was, I'm not a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. I'm not a stand-up comedian. And he said, I would get up there and I would have like a slideshow and I would tell stories and things, but I'm not a stand-up.
Yeah.
And I started out the same way. Mm-hmm. I would say, I'm not a stand-up. I got a slide thing. I got stories. But it's a crutch.
Right.
You know, and I looked at it as a crutch. And he said he looked at it as a crutch. Mm-hmm. And we did it we both did our crutch sort of related slideshow presentations for –
you know, a year, over a year, 2 years, three mm-hmm. years, or whatever. And then we both had a moment. And his moment came when he was in some small club in some podunk town. And he was getting ready to do his thing. And he looked out, and there were 14 people in the crowd. And nobody was at the club. And he just said, why am I doing the whole, you know, cat, dog and pony show with the slides and everything with nobody in the crowd? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to talk.
Right.
It's not even worth it. And he talked. And he said it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And my story was, I was doing a couple shows at a big club in Phoenix. And Sarah Silverman called me, you know, at 5 o'clock, and she said, you know, I want you to do this event, this charity. And I said, yeah. I said, well, I'm on the road right now, but I'll be back. And she said, what are you doing on the road? I said, you're doing stand up? And I said, no, not stand up. It's weird. You become very protective.
Right. Yeah.
Stolen valor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, no, not stand up. Not sound. I'm standing on a stage for an hour and a half making people laugh, but it is not stand up. So she's like, sounds like you're doing stand up. I said, no, you're doing stand up.
Yes.
I'm on stage doing like a,
Mark Twain.
Yeah, Mark Twain.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm doing a PowerPoint presentation. Yeah,
Will
with
Rogers.
Laughs. Yeah. And she's like, well, that sounds like stand-up. Like, not stand-up. Not stand-up. Go to the club. Both shows sold out. Do the first show. Goes great. Got the projector and all the slides and everything. 6 minutes before the late show, sold out again. Guy just comes back, goes, bulbs burnt out on the projector. And I'm like, so what do we got? It's like, we got nothing. We just got you and a microphone and a sold out venue. And I was like, oh, shit. I started like frantically making notes like, oh, yeah, what do I talk about? Does this work without the picture? I think I could describe the picture and I'll make it work. And I went out and crushed it that night.
Yeah.
And he said, as was me, but I sort of weaned myself off it. He said, that's the last time I did. I just went out and did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you need that bulb burning out moment. You
could
easily do it. It's a weird thing. You start memorizing the stuff. You start, but it's more living it. It's
right.
More like I am a stand-up versus I'm this placeholder for a stand-up with a slide projector. You could start that trajectory. You could be there in a short period of time, and you could just travel, start working clubs. Like, you can do it. It's hard when you're selling out, when the fans are there, when it's comfortable. You also got that vibe of like, well, what if I just walk into Caroline's on a Wednesday night? That's not my crowd. They will be your crowd. Like, you will overcome that. Like, you can do it. So you just have to think of your bulb burnout moment or your no one's in the crowd moment to start that transition.
Yeah. It's like when your parents take off the training wheels without telling you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just ghost ride you right into the neighbor's shrub.
Exactly.
So this is for you. And you know, you think about the economics of it, like what it costs to do a network late night show, which I've been involved with, and just looking around at the multiple buildings, the writer's room, there's 13 writers. They're all making six figures. They're all getting free lunch. I mean, just the writers alone and the staff. I mean, I don't know what your full staff is.
I think it's something like 12 total, 13.
Right, and we're talking about into the 80s
on
these shows. So, I mean, the economics of it has to be amazing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you're getting paid.
No. Yeah. Does that include – when you say like 80, because we've talked about this a lot. Does that include like the floor director and stuff like that? Because we share that stuff too.
Really?
Yeah. We share that, like, for example, you know, our floor director will do our show and then do maybe Tucker. So it's like – it's, you know, it's not like you have your own dedicated person as well. But it's like we don't have a writer's room.
Right.
You know, and I think everybody's – like our writers – if we have, or the people that work at our, bring their Tupperware lunches.
Right.
That's so you know it's not six figures.
It seems like when it comes time to renegotiate the contract, you could probably be in for a pretty good payday.
Yeah. I know that. I think they know that too, you know. But so does everybody else. Don't you think? I mean, it's like it's going to be a – it's going to be –
Well, the real question, I guess, for someone in your position is, you know, the way these things work is somebody on some other network or platform goes, hey, we'll pay more than that once the contract's up. But then the question is how does this work on TNT or whatever, or maybe it's a network, like, you know, and are we evolved enough or we come far enough that other networks are sort of going, maybe we can cherry pick some guys off of Fox.
Yeah. Well, I think that's happening with, there's, is it, what's his name? Charlamagne?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's putting out something on Comedy Central, another late night show.
Oh, yeah.
So there, and I just, the reason why I know that is because I know people that he's contacted. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I shouldn't say this, but I can't, because if I'm going into a contract, this is the worst thing that you could say. But I'm happy here. Like, I don't, like, it's, you know, you look at, like, what happened to Conan, like, where he went. Was that TNT?
I think so. And then there's, like, Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's stories of people leaving the nest.
Yeah. And then,
for, you know, bigger and brighter and shinier objects.
Yes. And then you never hear from them again.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I think Conan just signed a $150 billion deal with Sirius XM.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd like to have that kind of obscurity in my life.
Me too. And I know Megan's probably doing just fine. So,
yeah, she is. But there is that thing of, you know, is it the host? Is it the platform? Is it the audience? You know, I used to be on MTV. MTV was like, it's all about us,
mm-hmm.
not really about Carson Daly or Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
It's about being on MTV, mm-hmm. you know. And then you have to also think, well, with success, there's going to be imitation. I mean, it's got to be other places going, hey, look what Gutfeld's doing over there. We mm-hmm. got to do our version of that.
Yeah, yeah. But where would that might not be on the networks. I don't think that would be.
No.
No, it would definitely be Daily Wire.
Right.
You know, what else? Well, that's about the only Newsmax?
Newsmax.
O-A-N.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But it's – I mean, I don't know. I mean, there – I mean, I'm trying to think of people that would be doing – would be good at doing that, and you're already doing it. You were like first.
So how – for you – and, you know, I've talked about this with my manager, I guess we'll call him Mike August, that he's like – Gutfeld is a huge story. This is a huge story that nobody wants to talk about, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yeah.
Like, they hate your story. When I say they, I mean, like, mainstream media hates it because they don't like acknowledging that someone is doing something that's different than what they're doing and that they're having success.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've found through my experience with mainstream media, which is they either attack you or they completely leave you alone. It's just dead air. If you are having success, it's as if you didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, the biggest tip of the cap you can get from them is nothing, because it means you're succeeding, or they would be attacking you.
This is so funny. It's like I'm conducting an experiment where the only attention that I receive from any – well, like mainstream media in general is on the 5. So if I do something on the 5, it's like – let's say if I say something – like But on my show, nothing. But so I'll get positive press about the ratings all the time, and it'll sneak into like Forbes or Hollywood Reporter.
Wall Street Journal or
something. Yeah, something like that. But in terms of like – anything else, the zeitgeist or whatever you want to call it, it's not there. But like the 5 is like that's because it's not different enough, I guess, or it's like they can't. It's been around. It's not me.
It's really not their format.
Yeah.
And late night is their format.
Yeah.
And the 5 isn't their format.
Yeah.
So you didn't infiltrate.
Yes.
Their format. Mm-hmm. You're just doing your format or the format or a format, mm-hmm. or even Fox's format with the 5. But it's interesting that you have a kind of control group, and that,
yeah,
you know, reminds me of a story, Greg.
It is interesting because not many guys have two shows, and you're right. It's interesting. Five is okay. They can report on it. They can say good or bad or whatever. But late night, now it's personal, and now you're infringing on their territory. I remember speaking to Conan years ago in New York, a little bit after 9/11. Jimmy and I were both out here for the Hugh Hefner roast, and we're hanging around, and Conan was out of New York, and they couldn't get anyone to fly into New York because the buildings were still, like, smoldering, you know, and just he couldn't get gas. But they found out Jimmy and I were in town. But I'd done Conan and maybe alienated the crowd, let's say, when I was on the show. I thought it was a good spirited set, but I was on the couch. I was getting into it with the crowd. I thought it was fun. I think Conan freaked out a little bit. And so now they called Jimmy. I remember we're just walking through Manhattan, and like real last minute, like, hey, can you do Conan tonight? And he was kind of walking with me, and he kind of looked at me, and he said, yeah, I can do it with Adam. Only if me and Adam do it, I'll do it. I don't want to do it alone. And they said to him, we don't do partners. We only do single guests. And I said, that's interesting because I was on Conan with my partner, Dr. Drew, a couple of years earlier. So they picked the only guy who had another partner who was a guest on their show. And that's kind of like what you're talking about.
Yes.
With the five.
Yeah.
So they hate this story because and I don't know why the left and the mainstream media have declared themselves this sort of, you know, guard or custodian of media or all the themes or the Hunter Biden laptop or the Border Patrol with the whips. You know, it's like, why the themes? Why so strong with the themes? Why not just report shit?
There's a complex explanation about it, but then there's like just like how wrong I was about that the things that were on college campuses were going to stay there. I remember thinking, like, we'd always make this joke, how is a gender studies grad ever going to find a job? They did.
Right.
They did.
They work for the New York Times they were, now.
Yeah. And so it's like I totally misjudged the staying power of that stuff because it's in every company. It's in every human resources department. You get emails constantly about diversity, inclusion, whatever, DIE, I can't remember the other one, inclusion, equity,
right,
which isn't even real.
Right.
And so you get all the – I think that has just spread out. Now we're in like one – the media is almost like a campus now. Mm-hmm. So you there are some people that are allowed to speak. Some people aren't. If you know, and I'm basically an uninvited guest on the campus that you would call the media. And then they can choose to when I talk about the Hunter thing and even the Border Patrol thing, they can choose to amplify a theme or erase a theme. It's like that's not going to – and like this show or Hunter, it's like that thing doesn't exist, but this thing does. And they do it all in unison because they're all cut from the same cloth. They're all the same people. They ignore so many – it's weird. Like there's so many bad crimes going on, and maybe I'm indulging in it too much by looking at it, but it's nowhere else. It's like, you know, the guy has a heart, as you said, tape of the guy having a heart attack, and they looted his why isn't that I don't know, that to me is, I mean, we're having 1,000 Bernie Getz moments,
right?
Or remember that Utah kid who was killed in New York in like the 90s? That changed that I think it was during Dinkins. He was an 18-year-old kid from Utah, gets stabbed on the subway, changed everything in New York. Reading about it, they say that. But like you can have these things where, you know, a Wall Street banker gets murdered on a Sunday morning on a train, or an Olympic athlete gets
bashed,
or a race car driver
stabbed to death.
One of these stories itself used to be enough, and everybody go, okay, this stuff's gone far enough. We have to put the victims first because we flipped it now. The victimizers are the victims. But maybe it's because of social media, everything's too fast. But we do not pay attention or allow things to change us anymore. It drives me crazy, you know?
Well, the left and sort of the mainstream media has created a weird
they have painted themselves into a bizarre corner. And, you know, you talk first about stuff they built up or stuff they dismiss versus stuff they ignore. And it's like, look no further than Hunter Biden's laptop. Yeah. That's both stories. That's a total dismissal of it, mm-hmm. then a total denial of a dismissal and just a non-story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was talking to Dr. Drew about that, and he was saying, why are they protecting Hunter Biden, or why are they protecting Joe Biden? And mm-hmm. I said, they're protecting themselves. Mm-hmm. They got it wrong.
Yeah.
They lied. Mm-hmm. They knew they got it wrong. They knew they were lying. Otherwise, there's zero journalism in them at all. They knew what they were doing. So they go build it up and then leave it alone.
Yeah.
And when it comes to crime, they've laid out a narrative. And the narrative is white cops shoot unarmed black teens,
right.
males, in the back when their hands are up and they're mm-hmm. yelling, don't shoot. And so they laid that narrative out. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, and the homeless, the face of homelessness is a mother of three who yes. lost her job and is forced
Vietnam
to move
vet.
Out of her apartment. It's a Vietnam vet yes. rattling a can because he doesn't have his use of his legs and all yes. this stuff. And or Asian bashing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, you know, if we call it the Chinese flu, they're going to get – it's. So what they've done is they turned black teen boys into victims, mm-hmm. and then they've said white supremacy is the biggest problem this country has. Mm-hmm. Well, then when you look at the story and you look at the perp and you look at the victim, and now
what can you do?
Completely fucked up yeah. their narrative.
Yeah.
So when your narrative is completely fucked up, much like your late night narrative
right.
of succeeding late night, the answer is just walk away.
Yeah, exactly.
I, you know, they pan, you know, I did a film with Dennis Prager called No Safe Spaces, and, it, you know, they completely attacked that
right.
film. The next film I did was called Uppity. It was about the first black race car driver to race at Indy. It was a human rights, civil rights story about a black man who triumphed in a sport that didn't, you know, no reviews.
Of course.
No reviews. It was on Netflix for 3 years. It had zero reviews on Rotten Tomatoes because that's them going, oh, he told a good, no, mm-hmm. no comment on that. They can't give it up. So what you're dealing with the news is we'll wait around until a white cop shoots someone darker than him mm-hmm. and we'll be all over it. And then if the black teen stabs a bodega owner or vice versa or the race car driver, whatever it is, we'll just keep walking.
Yeah, exactly. We'll give it the couple of hours of coverage, but there's going to be something coming along that we'll be able to attach ourselves to, and
right.
and that's what they'll do. Meanwhile, it is like a weird user interface for the left. If you look at any – like if you want to, you can actually – there are enough white cops or any cops shooting unarmed people cases – that not enough. There is an amount that you can actually study because there's not a lot of them.
Right.
So when you look at it, then you find out all these things that actually it's minority cops that are more likely to shoot than white cops and all this other stuff. But they will not – they cannot go beneath that little layer. They have to just deal with the icons. It's like a computer screen. You
right.
know? It's like we can only have the white cop, the black victim, but you can't – but if you go, well, what if we just – what if I click – how do you get there? You can't do that. It's just that – those symbols and it's
– but it's really the opposite of journalism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Hunter Biden's laptop gets dropped off at some computer repair place. Mm-hmm. If you're CNN and someone says, is it real? Is it authentic? Is it Russian propaganda? You should go, I don't know. We're yeah. going to put six guys on it and find out.
Yeah. Not the 50 intel, the letter. That's the thing.
If that's the craziest part.
If the Republicans win the House, they got to do an investigation on these 50 or 49 intel experts.
51, I think.
51, yeah. Because the New York Post did a good thing where they called each one of them up
right.
and they wouldn't answer. I think one or two people answered it and somebody had the balls to say, I stick by it. But nobody admitted they were wrong. It is pretty fantastic. Now, I get the sense that the spigot is opening a little bit
yes.
because they want to get rid of Joe. So now you're seeing more Hunter Biden stuff and I think that's going to be maybe their way of pushing Joe out. If Joe doesn't
yeah, my game with the intel guys are I like to play a game called Stupid or Liar.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Liar.
Yeah.
Because you don't work your way up to the head of the FBI by being stupid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The combined experience of those 51 guys was 2,000 years of vetting things. And they all decided and signed off that it was Russian propaganda, which is insane and kind of disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
what else?
I get Donna Brazile.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what she does.
Yeah, but it kind of makes you think that, like, all the people you laughed at as conspiracy are actually turned out to be more right than you ever were, and now you can't trust anything. It's like, okay. Maybe so-and-so – the tinfoil hat was an insult, was unjustified.
Yeah.
You know?
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Gutfeld right after this. Does anything matter more than the safety of you and your loved ones? Well, of course not. So how come so many home security companies don't act like they care? Well, Simply Safe does. I trust and recommend Simply Safe. I've been using these guys for years. The stuff is sleek. It works. It's simple. Set it up yourself. No drilling holes. Peel and stick. Batteries last up to 10 years. 24/7 professional monitoring. Simply Safe's agents dispatch police, first responders, the moment a threat is detected. Even if you're not at home or can't be reached, $1 a day. No long-term contracts or hidden fees. Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplysafe.com/Adam. Go today for free indoor security camera plus 20% off with interactive monitoring at simplysafe.com/Adam.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
What does a party mean to you? Good times with friends? Loud music and exotic dancers in cages? Little people in cupid wings swinging from the ceilings? Whatever a party is to you, we know how to make it better. By popping motherfucking bottles. And Corolla Drinks has got you covered. We're proud to introduce to the world the bubbly nectar that is sparkling rosé. We captured the stone and tropical fruits from our original rosé and added a little more party. Pop a bottle at brunch, on game day, at a brisk, or in the club. We promise wherever you are just got better. Hurry, this limited first run will run out. To get your first bottle of sparkling rosé for only $25. Head CorollaDrinks.com and let the party begin.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
People of Earth, it's time for another installment of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month, we got things that will take care of your body, soul, and scrotum. Like a sample pack of Tame the Beast Nut Butter, a blend with Tuck Everlasting anti-aging and anti-chafing ingredients that will keep your sack high and tight. We've also got the great Dano's Seasoning, who will make each and every kind of meat taste even better, whether it's beef, pork, or your fellow man. Dano's is low sodium and no sugar, so even Vinny will approve. We've also got Nude Mints to not only freshen your breath, but your gut biome too. These incredible products
and a bottle of your choice can be found at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25. So prep your mails box. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived.
All right, back with Greg Gutfeld. Gutfeld's the show weeknights on Fox, 11 p.m. And on the West Coast, it'll air at 8 p.m. Yeah, it's an interesting time we're living in. And, you know, I've never thought of myself as conservative. I just got kind of shoved into that stall because I thought Biden was an idiot. And every time someone talked about Trump, I was just like, I don't care what his personality is. I just want to focus on policy.
Right.
If his policy is good, if anyone's policy is good, I'm with them.
Yeah.
You know, we got in L.A., we have a horrible mayor. Rick Caruso's running for mayor. He's a Democrat. He's a Democrat whose every single one of his policies mirrors a Republican's policy.
Right.
So I got no problem.
Yes.
And I would not vote for any Republican who's mirrored every Democratic policy. And it's not even Democratic-Republican policy. It's like effective policy versus nothing.
Sanity.
If you want to do something about homelessness, you got my vote. If you want to hang around and have a commission and conduct another study on it and have another discussion about it while some other Olympian is getting bashed in the head with a pipe or some NASCAR driver is getting shivved at a Shell station, then I'm out. I don't care what side you're on.
Yeah.
But I don't know when, and it's also like, when did the left go so hard? Like, is that all just it all got off the campus?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was doing I feel like it was always there, and its job is to always push itself further. That's why they call themselves progressives. They're always progressively, I guess, worse. I don't know. But
well, I always say it's got the word progressive and then movement in it.
Yes.
Like, what part of that says pump the brakes?
Exactly. Exactly.
There's no sedentary.
No.
There's no statue.
Yeah.
It's just move progressively.
And that's why you can't say racism has been solved.
Right.
And so what we're doing now is we're running out of oppressors. So there's a delight that we have in watching the left eat itself. So
right.
They're turning on, and then you're watching leftists leave. Really smart people are going like, my God, and then their people are coming like Matt Taibbi. You know, I used to make fun of him in the mid 2000s, and now I feel bad because maybe it was me. You know, because now I'm looking at him, I go, well, actually, him and I are kind of similar. Same thing with Glenn Greenwald. I used to make when him and I were writing at the Huffington Post, I would just, you know, jab him all the time. And maybe he – but I don't think he remembers it. But but then I read him and I go, this guy is like brilliant. And I think there's the issue is that they've got caught up in this kind of, on the machine that it just can't stop. It's a thing now that like, okay, there's still – if we say racism has been defeated, then do we shut the machine down? It's kind of like the maybe it was Andrew Sullivan was talking about gay rights and saying like – talking about Pride Month. And it was like, oh, do we really – like, is this necessary anymore?
Right.
Do we need to have parades to celebrate, you know, blah, 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 or a whole – like in New York, a whole month.
Right.
You know, and I think it was him who said – and only he can say that because he's gay, you know, saying like this – haven't we – you know, come on. And like, but you can't say that because then the it's almost like – maybe it's like telling a capitalist that they've made enough money. You know,
right.
You can't do that. Telling a leftist that you can no longer fight for social justice, then they don't know what else to do. And they also don't work. This is the other thing, or they work in organizations that grift money, but they really don't have other jobs.
Right. Yeah. So here's a theory. And I tell my son, he's 16, he's kind of a chip off the old block. He's not down with any of the woke shit and everything else. And I keep telling him, you're free to say whatever you want, do whatever you want. I don't care. I'm happy you don't want to wear a mask in the cafeteria, but you have to get fucking good at something.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to be fucked.
Yeah.
Now, it can be welding. You could write for Substack, but you better get good.
Right.
Because you really – it's hard to cancel you. Like, if you're – an NBA player in their prime, you'll always find a team,
yeah,
no matter what. And if you've lost a step and you're not really draining the three, you will get cut if you say something. Then it becomes about a sort of popularity,
yeah,
contest. And I'm wondering if these people you're speaking of, Glenn Greenwald, mm-hmm, guys like that, I was like, well, those guys are good.
Good, yeah.
And when you're good and somebody tells you, say this, and you go, but that's not true, and they go, say it, you go, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm good. Mm-hmm. It's if you're good at welding, if you're a good, yeah, fabricator, and, you know, your boss walks in and goes, I want you to weld me a swastika. Yeah. You go, I don't care how prestigious the parade is, I'm out. If you're a shitty welder, you have to kind of stay behind. You
exactly
go, I can't get another job.
Yes.
And so maybe the wheat from the chaff is happening. Like maybe the smarter,
yes, that's brilliant,
people with more integrity, but just who are better, who that, just go, I'm leaving. And someone goes, well, where are you going to get another job? And you go, I'm taking my brain. I'm good.
Yeah.
I get to go other places and be good.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if it's this sort of weak, soft middle that is just so pliable and scared shitless for their jobs. You know, Elon Musk doesn't give two fucks,
mm-hmm,
what we think of him or being deplatformed. He builds platforms, mm-hmm, you know?
Yeah.
But have if you, you're somewhere in the middle, you got to be careful.
Have you shared this theory? Because I could steal it and use it tonight.
Brand new. I will bequeath it to you. It's trademarked, obviously, so yes, we'll have to run a ghost.
No, but that makes total sense because it's weird. It's like
– I've never had this concept. It's just you kept bringing up people,
mm-hmm,
and I've run into a lot of these people, and it's like, oh, you're really smart, mm-hmm, and you crossed over,
right,
from here to there, and it's like, oh, because you're good.
Yeah.
And in any job where you're good, you're fucking good.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're not looking over your shoulder all the time. The middle – is compliant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where are they going to go?
Right.
Exactly. Where are they going to – yeah, that's true. And I see that in – I think the most mediocrity you're going to find is in journalism. And I said it before, like I was talking about doing a magazine. Magazines have really big staffs to put out something once a month. That's what we did. You could get lost. You could do that for 30 years and – gain some kind of prestige and win awards.
Right.
And still be shitty and have terrible belief systems like they all do in magazine publishing in New York. They're all – I mean, look what's happening. It's funny. Look what's happening to the magazine that you probably worshipped, Sports Illustrated. I remember that. Going to the barbershop. This is the thing. It was iconic. You can't look at it now. It's
right.
I mean,
right,
it's just strange. The bikini, I mean, the swimsuit issue was not, it's not a big deal. It's a swimsuit. But what it is now,
yes,
is so strange. And this is now happening. Another great example is Teen Vogue, which is basically a Marxist pamphlet. I mean,
right,
I don't even know why is it called teen?
Yeah.
You could count the number of teens that actually have ever picked up.
I am like this close to canceling my subscription,
yeah,
after 26 years.
Not Teen Vogue, SI.
No, Teen Vogue.
Teen Vogue, good.
I'm talking about Teen Vogue.
Yes.
You said it's not even for young people. I'm telling you, I'm not young. But I like to keep up.
Yes.
It's a write-off because of what I do.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's like I learned in Teen Vogue earlier today. No, it's crazy what they've turned into.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, like, is there any warden in this prison?
There's no adults. Like,
there's no adults.
And this woke virus or whatever. It's like what's his name? Gad Saad calls it a mind virus.
Right.
It's like it just goes unchecked. And I think to your point, the only people that aren't catching it leave. So it's like,
right,
you kind of look and you go, oh, it's like zombies. We can't. No, he's been bit. You got to
go.
Right. Like the SI has been bitten and you can't unbite it.
And you're right in that it's sort of self-selecting because if all the people that we're speaking of, and I'm thinking of, is it James McMurray? What's McMurray's first name?
I know who you're talking about. Great guy. He just wrote
Fantastic.
Madness of Crowds. Murray. He was just on my show. He's on my show a lot. He works at Fox, but I can never remember his first name.
I know. I just said
Douglas Murray.
Douglas Murray.
Yeah,
Douglas
we got both
Murray.
Names
Sorry.
Wrong.
I know.
And I'm going to play this tape back to him.
Douglas Murray. All right. The guy's brilliant.
Yeah.
So he goes, fuck it. I'll go write about what I want to write about. I'll do what I want to do. But it's like, you're gay. You can't say that.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say what I want to say. And so now the people that are left at Teen Vogue are essentially the people that were bright and self-assured and understood that there's other options for them, so they didn't have to parrot these insane lies.
Right.
They all left. Now it's a group where, you know, it used to be 15 Baltimore Ravens fans and 4 Pittsburgh Steelers fans. Well, the Steelers fans just cleared out.
Yeah.
And now it's nothing but Ravens fans.
Yes.
And now we're going to decide on how to report on Baltimore Ravens.
Exactly.
And Big Ben doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
And that's essentially, whether it's the Times, LA Times, New York Times, or whatever, these sane adults who have, you know, who have some intellectual honesty and capacity are going, no, I don't think Gay Pride Month should be spread into Gay Pride Year. I'm not down with that.
Yeah.
And they're leaving.
Yeah.
So now it's really getting concentrated, right?
Yeah, there's two examples that are where there feels like there's an attempt, but I think it's going to – CNN is trying to – but I haven't seen actual real examples except their Biden criticisms.
Right.
But I've also noticed Newsweek, which went woke, is now – feeling like it's kind of tapping the brakes and hiring people. I've read like a couple of things out of Newsweek, and I'm going, is this actually Newsweek? So I'm wondering if it is possible to save a zombie, but I don't know. It's like for all purposes, Newsweek might already be dead. You know.
Well, you're thinking this, but you won't articulate it. I give you some credit for turning the ship. Not around.
Slightly.
But veering.
Yeah.
You know, it's a collective effort.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Maybe Joe Rogan gets a little credit. Maybe all the aforementioned intellectually honest folks who went to Substack. You know, maybe everyone breaks off a little piece of credit. But you are out, invisible, and nightly, and the ratings are there. And if you're running CNN or you're running Newsweek or Teen Vogue, you have to kind of be saying, how fast do we want to run down this path
right.
with a cliff at the end of it? Maybe we should slow it down to a brisk walk, which feels like I feel like the sprint toward the dead end left is turning into sort of a vigorous walk at
and
this
then maybe
point.
Maybe they won't notice if we just start walking backwards.
Right.
If we just start backing away. Look, move our arms forward.
Everyone, turn your fanny packs around.
Yes.
We're going backwards.
We're going backwards. But the thing is, the great thing about our side, if there's a side, and there is that we'll forgive. Like, I generally will forgive anybody unless they're real pricks. But if somebody who was ex-woke – generally the ex-wokers oftentimes get to be kind of interesting people. I mean, look at Russell Brand.
Right.
Russell Brand was pretty hardcore left. When I was living in London and I was listening to his shows there. He was Big Brother's Big Mouth. Now he's – I swear to God, that guy sounds like a hipper – well, not hipper. He sounds like a more interesting version of me. I mean, he looks like a fucking guru.
Right.
You know, he's just like, you know, he's had his fill of hedonism.
Right.
You know, that's his thing. It's like, it's all behind me, mate.
Right.
It's all behind me now. I'm just going to but everything he talks about is like, holy crap. He's on every side, the right side. It's strange. That's new. It's new. It's shocking. In Rogan the same way. I mean, but you know, I have to share the compliment then with you were before me. I mean, I think you were starting – when did you start your podcast?
It's about 13 and a half years.
So that was Red Eye started at, you know, in 2007. So – but that's – because that's kind of where we met, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure because you even – I think you did like a blurb for my second book or something. I'm pretty sure you did.
I'm sure I gave it to my assistant, but
yes.
Whatever. It was still very generous
yes.
and magnanimous of me.
No, I'm with you. Those people who have gone through it and come out the other side are more nuanced, more interesting, and in a way, purer and more focused.
Right. And the person that has been right wing all their lives, I don't even have them on my show.
Yeah, they're boring.
They're extremely
one-dimensional.
They're one-dimensional, and you can get it anywhere. It's like that. It's like Penn Jillette. I think I even said this to you once before because it sounds like I'm repeating it. That like if I get two political beliefs out of you, I don't want to be able to predict a third.
Right.
There's a lot of people where you can mouth their words as they're saying them, and that's I don't have them on the show because I feel like. That it's good red meat to have them on once in a while, but
right.
it also just makes everybody you die a little bit inside. You know? It's like this is not what I got into. Other people can do this. I can't do this, you know.
Geico, do you rent your home? Well, sure you do, and it can be hard work. But you know it's easy. Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save and how easy it is when you bundle with Geico. Visit geico.com today. Well, I'll tell you what he can do. Gutfeld, weeknights on Fox, 11 p.m. Eastern time. And again, 8 I watch out on the West Coast. The monologues are fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
It's really you see when the comedy, you know, Tucker's monologues are great and he's infusing more comedy into them. But when they're comedy with the message, they just land with so much more clarity. The One with Greg Gutfeld as well. Also The Five, of course. And Greg, thank you for being generous with your time because I know you have such a busy day.
Yeah, I'm going to go put on makeup and do The Five.
I will see you on set, my friend.
Yes.
Thank you,
Gutfeld.
Brother. Till next time, this is Adam Carolla saying mahalo.
Make sure you get a copy of Adam's new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something, Advice, Answers, but No Apologies. The hard copy and audiobook are available wherever finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Get them right now at adamcarolla.com.
You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.